You're listening to Root Cause Remedies, a show that explores environmental justice from right here in Hawaii. I'm Tina Grandinetti, and I'll be your humble host and fellow traveler on this Huaka'i to learn more about the issues that affect the lands, waters, and people that sustain us.
Aloha, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today for our energy sovereignty panel. My name is Todd Yamashita, and I'm the president of Oahu Energy Cooperative Molokai. It is with great pleasure that I will be your moderator for this incredible panel planned for all of you on energy sovereignty. So, you know, what is energy sovereignty? How can we use native intelligence and indigenous perspectives, not just to inform our transition to renewables, but also to lead the dialogue in this space? If we understand our energy resources as sacred and shared, what would our energy future look like? And what is our individual kuleana to that vision? These are just some of the elements I personally can't wait to hear about from each of our panelists. And just as a reminder that this is an independent complement to the Hawaii Energy Conference. This is kind of a little bit more of a grassroots approach. And, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, thank you guys for joining us. We really appreciate the opportunity of having kind of like this community first grassroots kind of talk story. So mahalo you guys for joining us. Like I was saying, it's just really important for us, you know, as a network of community members, you know, we've been meeting over the past several months to uplift community justice in Hawaii so that our voices can be, you know, more a part of this mainstream conversation. You know, this urgent transition to renewable energy is really a prime opportunity to bring indigenous perspectives and community voices together. We're starting off with Ikaika Hussey. He's Oahu born and raised. Ikaika is a labor organizer with Unite Here Local 5, one of Hawaii's largest and strongest organizing unions. He's president of Faith Action, a grassroots interface nonprofit organization dedicated to community equity and justice, and a Native Hawaiian rights and sovereignty activist. Then we're gonna transition to Dr. Tevita Ka'ili. He's originally from Nuku'alohapa, Tonga Tapu, with ancestral ties to Tonga Samoa, Fiji, and Rotuma. And he's currently the Dean and Professor of Cultural Anthropology, Language and Performing Arts at BYU University. And he's a longtime resident of Kahuku, and he is also a community activist there. So last but certainly not least, we are honored to share space with Dr. Pualani Kanaka'ole Kanahele, whose lifetime accomplishments as a kumukula, writer, educator, musician, and dedicated kia'i. She was born in Keokaha in the Big Island. She was reared in the traditions of her ancestors, and, you know, she's just been a really highly influential in a resurgence of Hawaiian practices and interest in all things Hawaiian. So, you know, just so unreal to have all of you guys here together with us. Thank you guys for joining us. I'm going to pass the mic over to Ikaika. He's going to start our panel viewing our energy system as an opportunity for sovereignty.
Hey, thank you, Todd. So it's a pleasure to be here, and it's an incredible honor to share, you know, this time with academics and scholars whose work I absolutely revere. And so I'm a little, you know, overwhelmed, but thank you very much. So I'm going to start with, you know, with just a brief introduction. So I'm an organizer, and part of one thing that I've been very kind of passionate about is how do we build, you know, kind of local control over our economy and over our energy. So that's what I'm working on under the rubric of this organization that we're starting called Hawaii Federated Industries. So I wanted to start off by talking about a place that is kind of close to my home and what used to be close physically, and this is the Heia fish pond, Paipai Oheia, as it's now known. It's an 800-year-old fish pond. I used to live in Kaneohe. I was born and raised in that area. And, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't really even know about this fish pond. And over the past several years, it's been undergoing a process of restoration. And so it's now something that we can come and visit and see. And the reason I'm showing this to us is because I want to ground us in all of the amazing work that our kupuna have done. There's kind of this myth that Hawaii can't do big projects, or that the biggest project we've ever done is like the rail, which obviously is not complete. But I want us to think about all of the incredible engineering and science that our kupuna have done for literally centuries. And the fish ponds are one example of that. So in 2015, there was an effort to restore a part of the fish pond wall, which had a puka in it. And so the event was called Pani Kupuka. I went with my kids and we just went to kind of help. And I love, from an organizer and also someone who just loves people, I love the fact that it was all of these hands which came together to work on the fish pond. And so there's a few lessons which I kind of took away from that day. One is our ancestors have a history of incredible engineering, fascinating work, which has really stood the test of time and has been maintained over centuries. I also was amazed by seeing how wealth, in the most pure sense, in the sense of Waiwai, that it is built not through an individual like Jeff Bezos or Zuckerberg, but it's built collectively. It's built through the labor that we do together. It was also built using our resources, you know, our pohaku, our people, on our own terms. And we built it to meet our own needs. We built it because we knew that this is a way to feed the generations. And the fourth takeaway, you know, and I'm certain that there are others who have other things they'd like to add to this, is that profit is not the goal. The goal is to take care of the sustenance and the needs of the community. So, you know, food, energy, I think we need to think about those are our goals unto themselves. Profit should not be the reason why we do those things. So I have a modest proposal, and that's for us to start thinking about what are the elements of energy sovereignty. I think that it should actually start with the question of design. You know, there's a Steve Jobs quote, which I like, is that design is not how things look, but it's how things work. And when you look at the way that our ancestors have designed projects, you know, fish ponds, the Auai, the incredible lo'i systems all throughout the islands, and even things like the Naulu forest on Big Island, where my family is from. Our ancestors decided to plant breadfruit with the intention of drawing the clouds down lower. I mean, that's an amazing way of thinking about the environment and way of thinking about engineering. Design is really important. And so as we think about like what Dr. Ka'ili and Dr. Kanahele are going to be speaking about in a minute or so, is that the ike of our kupuna should not just be something that's added after the fact, but it should be at present at the very kind of inception of an idea. And in fact, it should be the thing which itself leads to an idea, you know, to be conceived and to be executed upon. That if we have the right foundation of knowledge, if we, you know, take the classes that these wonderful academics offer, and learn all these things that have worked in our islands for thousands of years, we will have better designs. We will do a better job of designing where the solar panels should go, where the wind farms should go, where the farms themselves should go. You know, all of these questions that are often left to folks who may or may not have had the access to that sort of ike. The second thing which I think is important is control. The projects themselves should be controlled by the community. They should be controlled by the working people of our community, by the indigenous people of our community, for sure. There's a related thing, which is ownership. Ownership is really important. And I like to think, and I'm going to point a little bit in the future, but Molokai is an incredible example of what we can do with regards to local ownership of energy projects. And those projects should also benefit our community. You know, I think that there was kind of a problem with the way that we thought about the wind projects on Lanai and Molokai previously, because the energy would be consumed by the people of Oahu. The benefit should first go to the people of Molokai and Lanai if the energy is being produced there, right? It doesn't make any sense for them to still have high prices while the energy goes to Oahu, et cetera. And the last thing that I'd like to suggest is that we need to think both locally and globally. These are global problems, and we need to think about how can the things that we learn here in Hawaii be applied to folks all around the world that are dealing with sometimes similar, but sometimes dissimilar, but certainly all the similar problems around climate and energy needs. So I mentioned, you know, and I'm really enthusiastic about the Molokai Cooperative Ho'ahu and the work that Todd and his board are doing there. I think it's amazing. I think it really is the beginning of what we should be doing throughout the rest of the chain, throughout the rest of the archipelago. And I think that's what we got to think about is how do we export, how do we grow that vision and to start building, you know, I would call it a national cooperative that takes care of the energy needs of the entire archipelago. What I wanted to share real quick is a project that I've been working on, and that is right now photovoltaics is primarily for residential use. That's really important because that is a large percentage of our carbon consumption and also of our, you know, it's sort of a low-hanging fruit, right? We need to power our homes, but it is possible to create. Actually, let me back up a second. The single largest source of our carbon emissions is actually aviation. It's long distance aviation. It's when we fly from island to island. That's short distance, but that will probably be taken care of by hybrid and battery powered jets. But there's a big puka in our energy equations right now, which is how do we get from Hawaii to California, to Las Vegas, to Japan, et cetera. And so the project that I've been working on is around developing a locally owned, essentially cooperative that produces replacement fuels, a carbon neutral jet fuel that can decarbonize aviation. And so the goal of our project under Hawaii Federated Industries is to decarbonize 100% of Hawaii's long haul aviation. And it's an audacious goal, but actually totally doable. And so I wanted to close with going back to the local versus global thing, you know, for a minute. The work that we're doing in our islands, on our individual islands and throughout our archipelago is very important for us here. What I have in front of you is a map of temperatures throughout the world. This is 1893, a very auspicious year for us here in Hawaii. And this is what it looks like in 2020. It's an incredibly dire situation that we're looking at. And so what I wanted to close with is simply the notion that this panel is very important. The work that the panelists are doing and that Sierra Club and others are working on is very important because this is the decade that matters. The UN has said that we only have up until 2030, really, to make the massive changes that we need to make in order to avert the most disastrous impacts of climate change. So I'm really grateful to everyone in attendance who works on a daily basis, thinking about climate, thinking about decarbonization, and also to the communities that are, you know, that are trying to shift the way that we are related, that the way that we relate to these energy projects. And my conceit, and I'm just going to be very transparent about it, is that we should be running our own programs, our own projects. That's the way to really resolve the tension. So I think we should all be taking a page from Todd's work on Molokai and think about how do we create local control, local ownership of energy throughout the Pai Aina. Thank you very much.
Wow. Hey, thank you so much, Ikaika. You know, you guys, I've known Ikaika for some years now, and this guy always strikes me as a person with really big ideas and outside the box yet tangible kind ideas. Thank you, Ikaika, for, you know, sharing some of your ideas about, you know, how to bring some equity to some of our communities. And, you know, you also remind me, you know, I'm lucky enough, I live right at the shoreline of a fish pond here on Molokai. And I often look out there and 35 acres or so, and I look at all the rocks in that wall and I think about, you know, all the ancestors, all the hands created those yeah. rocks and those walls, and the thing is still standing, still active today. Yeah. And so I guess with that, I'm going to dovetail over to Devita, who is going to be sharing with us about renewable energy as ancestors, which I cannot wait to hear about.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Ikaika, for that presentation. Deeply honored to be part of this panel and also with Dr. Polani Panahele. Toma tukuha whaatapu ki tangata I whanua o Hawaii. I first acknowledge that, you know, I'm speaking from the Tangata Whenua, the indigenous people of Hawaii, and to be mindful of the place that I'm standing on to present my presentation today. My presentation, Atua, Renewable Energy as Ancestors and Relatives in Moana Oceania. I want us to sort of shift our thinking about energy from commodities to think about it as more as an ancestors and relatives, as the way that most people who are indigenous to Moana Nui Akea or Oceania think about it. So for about 20 years now, I've been working with some other scholars from Moana Nui to think about some of our indigenous philosophy. And this is one of the philosophy that we've been working on is the indigenous Tava time-space philosophy of reality, which is a philosophy about how we arrange our time and space. As you all know, the way that we think, work within time and space, within Oceania and Whanganui is different from other places. And I want to start out with the idea that most of the societies within Oceania arrange time and space, or ta and ba, in holistic, communal, and relational fashion. As you've seen, Ikaika was talking about the collective communal way of working together as the Native Hawaiian were building many of the wonderful structures that we have here. And the reason why we did this is basically to synchronize our time and space to Mother Earth's holistic, communal, and relational time-space. Because what is happening today is we are sort of out of sync in the way that we relate to Mother Earth, or Tongan Whanua, which is also known as Whanua or Honua here in Hawaii. That our way of arranging our time now, people worship speed and things that are based on acceleration, that we slow down and make sure that we are within this relationship with Mother Earth or the Honua. So in Moananui or Oceania, including Hawaii, there's this concept called atua. Atua is actually the term as it was used 3,000 years ago. And over the years, the different dialects have used different terms for it. Here in Hawaii, it's akua. In Samoan, satua. In Tonga, is otua. As you can see, all of these are just variation of the same particular term. And it's basically deified ancestors or relatives, people who are we consider to be ancestors or relatives. They could be human or they could be otherwise. I think Dr. Polani will talk about them as elementals. But oftentimes they're translated as deities. But there was always a deep veneration towards these individuals or these manifestation. And what I want to do today is to talk about energy, that some of our renewable energy, or most of it specifically solar and wind, were part of this group that were considered to be atua, ancestors or relatives. So there were, atua of solar and wind. They were associated with certain otua or akua. Some were tane or kane, Tangaloa or Kanaloa here, or Maui and others. 2 days ago, it was the summer equinox here, and it's referred to here in Hawaiian as Ke ala polohiwa kane, which is to refer to it that the sun is actually traveling in this path of kane. And kane here is an important atua or akua here in Hawaii, that's associated with the summer equinox or certain, or even the northern part. And then Kanaloa, another important akua, was associated with the winter equinox, or even the southern part. But, other traditions have even sort of very local atua. In Tonga, we have Latu. In Kahuku, well, I'll talk a little bit, is Lewa, and then many others. So oftentimes there would be rituals that are associated with these akua. For example, here's a Tongan performance called the Metupaki that was done before, they would go on a voyage. Harnessing wind as an energy is not something that is new. Our ancestors did this. This was one of our most important elements. And before we even harness it or use it for any sort of sale, there was sort of rituals or prayers, more of gratitude that we're about to harness this particular atua for us to use in our sale. And this is a dance in Tonga called the Metupaki that's done for him. There's also an atua that is called Lulu that is associated with the sea. I want you to start thinking about energy as atua, relatives, and ancestors, versus thinking about them as a commodity or even a resource. These are some terms that's been used, and they are limited in the way that they influence our relationship to them. So here in Kahuku, where I'm at, it has its own. The Kahuku goddess of wind was Lewa, and Lewa is important, as some of you who are very familiar with the story of Hiiaka, you know that there are some interaction between Hiiaka and Lewa, and Lewa was considered to be a relative and came together with Pele from Kahiki. So this particular akua is very important because Kahuku has its wind, and others have come to harness this wind, but may not be concerned about the name of this wind, which is named Ahamanu. This is a name that is used for this wind here in Kahuku. Now, by not knowing the name of the wind or even the relationship that people have to this wind leva as an ancestor or relative, this could be seen as just another commodity to be used for energy and something to consume. So here I'm raising this question for us to think about what it means to view it from an indigenous Hawaiian, or even think of it from a Moana Nuiakea viewpoint. So what this does is it influences our relationality to them. When you see these resources or see them as atua or see the renewable energy, then there's a reciprocal relationship, a caring for the atua, a way of creating symmetrical and balanced relationship with them. Humans gets to synchronize their relationship to this, not the other way around, where you're just extracting and exploiting. The way that these comes about is that these viewpoints allows us to be able to have this particular relationship, or I refer to as relationality, both the relationship, but also the two who are related, the atua, the akua, and also the people, the humans, as they are trying to figure out the balanced way to relate to one another. And I want to make the point today is that when you begin to take on this sort of indigenous way of thinking about them, whether they're humans or elemental, as I think Dr. Pualani will talk about, it actually shift our relationship to them, to care, to take the time to think about, you know, are we over consuming these atua? Are we taking them for granted? Are we using them in right ways, in pono way? And these are the sort of shift that happens in our relationship when we move towards this particular way. Now, this is the reason why, if you have followed the United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People, it asks for consultation and consent from Indigenous people. And I refer to Indigenous people as the first conservationists. They were the first people who really wanted to take care of places where they were at, because not only their survival, but be able to thrive had to happen within that particular place. And I want to just read a little bit from this Article 32, Section 2 of the UN Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. State shall consult and cooperate in good faith with the indigenous peoples concerned through their own representative institution in order to obtain free and informed consent prior to the approval of any project affecting their lands or territories and other resources, particularly in connection with the development, utilization, or exploitation of mineral, waters, or other resources. Now, when people have deep genealogical ties to some of the renewable energy, solar or wind, then it makes sense that there should be consultation, but even move beyond consultation to consent. Oftentimes, consultation just goes through the motion of just consulting, and companies will say, well, we've already talked to them, and we've already consulted with them. But here, it specifies both consultation and consent. So consultation, and you have to give them opportunity for free, informed consent, right? Oftentimes, energy corporation will come and they will pay off the community or do other things to try to influence the process. But here, it is about that free, prior, informed consent, because the reason why, it's because these are where we are asking to harness some of the relatives, some of the ancestors, atua or akua of these particular place. And I think that's important as we continue to think about, you know, the energy that we're using. The Molokai group has been very inspiring to all of us, you know, in the process that they have gone through in making sure that this is, that things are done in a local manner. So that's the model for us in moving forward and working towards energy sovereignty. And with that, I'd like to leave that with all of you.
Well, thank you so much, Tavita. Just get chicken skin throughout that whole talk. You know, so often we're drawn into conversations that, you know, might not be traditionally associated with culture. You know, Tavita, I just want to thank you for grounding our energy dialogue in culture. You know, I think that if we can begin from within, you know, the dialogue and the process will truly be ours. Yeah. So mahalo for that. Continuing with that, we get to hear from Antipua, and Antipua is going to be presenting Naki'i Akua, or godly images. And she's going to lead us deeper into our cultural understanding of and connection to energy. Aloha, Antipua.
Aloha, ia kākou apau. And mahalo to Ikaika and Te Vita for their passion, the passion about their land, and in seeing that the land stays alive and giving back, as all of those things that have been brought down and given, it's a way of giving back. And that's what it's all about. It's about the continuum. But mahalo for this opportunity to reflect on kupuna knowledge of akua, their forms, their shape, their energy, and their function. I want to start with reading Lauren Andrews' dictionary interpretation of akua. By the way, I like his dictionary, and I like his interpretations because he has some interpretations that other dictionaries don't have, but this one is a little bit iffy. Okay, among Hawaiians, he says, formerly, akua was the name of a supernatural being, the object of fear or worship. Akua, God. The term akua on the visit of foreigners was applied to artificial objects, the nature or properties of which Hawaiians did not understand. According to him, as a movement of watch, a compass, the self-striking of a clock, at present, he says, the word akua is used for the true God, the deity, the object of love, and obedience, as well as fear. So this is his concept of Native Hawaiian perspective of akua. This is his concept of Native Hawaiian's perspective of akua. We didn't know that the word akua was God. That was their interpretation. This is enlightening because it describes his and maybe other foreigners and their comprehension of Hawaiian knowledge, which was inadequate. In this interpretive paragraph, Lauren talked about two time periods. One is an earlier time period with the explorers that came over after Captain Cook and just went through Hawaii to go to the Orient. But they had a really good relationship with the Hawaiians as they went through. They even took some of the Hawaiians to China and brought them back. And then there was another invasion of foreigners between the 1830s and in 1893, which is his time period, the time period of Lauren Andrews. And his time period was 1868, 1865. So if you look at time periods, you look at how their words are changing, etc. So when you look at earlier chants that we have, they talk about akua kinolau as energy, as space, as time and continuum. The akua to them were the entities of the natural world. The artificial objects mentioned above are relative to energy, time, continuum. He saw it as artificial objects. The Hawaiians related it to their natural world. So, you know, they're passing each other as far as they're not connecting as far as knowledge is concerned, as far as understanding is concerned, and as far as value is concerned. And I think that we're still doing that. We're still sort of passing each other without connecting. My function today is to introduce to you akua, who are not supernatural beings, but who are elements of nature. I have time for three male akuas focusing on Lono Kani and Kanaloa. We had hundreds of akuas. We have akuas that were of the natural world, and then we had relatives that were akuas that became our aumakuas, and carrying on with that. I'm going to start the PowerPoint, and I have Naki Akua godly images, which I'm going to be showing you in this PowerPoint. And as we look at the clouds on this side, this is Opua clouds, and it is akua. It is akua because it has water in it. It is akua because it tells you what the weather is. Okay. The other picture on this, on the other side is akua because it makes land. And I live on this island where I see it making land. And I don't see how anybody else makes land or can make land. Okay. And so this big rainbow that you see on the bottom is also a kua, because it tells you that there is still moisture in the air, but the sun is coming through. So it's a different time system. Okay, so I want to introduce the akua. And as I said, I'm going to talk about Lono, Kani, and Kanaloa really fast. But I want to introduce their nomenclatures. And nomenclatures are important because there are a lot of nomenclatures. So this first nomenclature is Lono Ika Owali. And nomenclatures tell you what the energy is right at the beginning. The Lono is an energy. And then it tells you what it's connected to or what its function is. Okay. In this particular one, it says Lono is the supreme element. And the other one is Lono Ika Olilani. Lono, the spatial atmosphere, when it appears. So Lono appears in the spatial atmosphere, or Lono is the spatial atmosphere. This is a puli of Lono, and it's just a short part of the whole prayer of Lono, and it tells you all of the body forms of Lono. So we're going to try to read through it. O Lono Iga Uli Lani Mai Loko Mai Yoko Maha Uli Kumai Yoka Ani Meka Nalo Ika Loko Ewe Ewe Lani. Po ina ik a u iloko ka I veve helen kuhulu ka ik paka aga uwe iloko ka elo. Okay, and so it talks about Lono, and it says that Lono is a spatial atmosphere, and it appears in a spatial atmosphere. So what is this spatial atmosphere? It has to do with space. It has to do with time continuum. It has to do with particular seasons. Okay, and so he says, it's within a net, and it increases in space. So this spatial atmosphere seems like it's in some kind of holding thing, an ahu of some sort, and it moves. Okay, and it says, also present are Kani and Kanaloa. Kani and Kanaloa share both water and sunlight. Within this space where entities grow, the Evelani is like the embryo. The Evelani is where things grow. And so it is in this space that things will grow and things will travel and things will move. And within this space where entities grow, rootlets develop and sprout. And it says it's in a protective wrap. It moves, that moves like the ocean. This is what our kupuna is saying. Protective wrap that moves like the ocean. Within this space of growth and development, within this Evelani. And when this moves, and at a particular time, which is the Lono season, the heavy rain will fall. Kuluka ika paka aka ua. Paka is when the rain is really heavy. Paka, paka, paka. Heavy rain. It is in the wet season of Kaelo. And Kaelo is in February and March. Okay, so we have these nomenclatures of Lono. We have this idea of the spatial atmosphere of Lono, and a spatial atmosphere where Kani and Kanaloa may also gather. So the Evevelani is that space right around the Earth. It was an atmospheric space, Earth's atmosphere. And according to them, this moves. Iponi is the word that they come out, that they describe it. This movement is like the ocean. And the Iponi is when the waves are breaking on the ocean. So this moves. This is a protective ahu of this Evelani. And they look at the earth as being the embryo. And the thing around it as being the protective part of that embryo. And so anything that's coming in will have to go through that protective ceiling that it has, that is still sort of, and if it's Kani and Kanaloa, it's watery. Okay, and this is the last two lines of the chen that I just did. Kulukahi kapaka kaua iloko kaelo. And this is what happens in the season of kaelo. After it gathers up there in the earth's atmosphere, eventually it comes down. And what comes down has to go back up. And what goes up has to come back down. The continuum is a necessary part of our energy. Okay. And if you look at this rain, this picture was taken in March. And if you look at the rain on the waterfall, the rain looks like it's just one big stream of water coming down. Doesn't look like drops. It's a big stream of water. And at this time of the year, Hilo people always go and look at the big water up because it's phenomenal. Okay, it's the beginning. It's a time of Lono. It's Ka'elo. And it's something to celebrate because it's a time of renewal. Okay, I'm going to talk about Kane. Kane, the nomenclature, Kane Ka'onohi o Kala, translated Kane, the eyeball of the sun. Kane is not the sun. Kane is the energy that comes off of the sun. Kane kumu honua. Kane is the earth's source. Now, how can Kane be the eyeball of the sun and still be the earth's source? Well, Kane ika viola. Kane that produces water. What produces water? Heat produces water. So heat produces water that gives life. That's how you translate that particular nomenclature. So we have Kane in these three possibilities. One is out in space, one is in the earth, and what is one that has to do with the creation of water. Okay. So this particular chant is all about Kane, and I'm just taking the very top part of the chant. O kane o kukapau me lono no I ka vai loa kalani ho nua. O e o kukupu I nana ku ilu na ka moku ho. Kane and ku, and so we're talking about ku now. Ku has to do with growth. So growth mentally, physically, emotionally, all of that is ku. And that's why the war gods are ku, because it's a way of taking over. It's a way of growing. But ku is also the growth of trees. It's also the growth of your children. It's also the growth of all of the fish in the ocean. Okay, but it's a way of bridging with lono in a saturated space. So they're talking about basically the same evelani in that saturated space. So the sky and the earth exist together. So in that sky and the earth, it's active, it grows, it lives, and then it ascends upon the land. And then the chant goes on and on and on into the ocean, back up into the sky, etc. But I just wanted to give you this first part of it to tell you that they sort of all say the same thing, maybe in a different way, say the same thing. So this other chant on the bottom is about the sun. And it belongs to another chant that talks about the ocean. And when all of the embryonics in the ocean, the male embryonics, the female embryonics are floating around. And that's what we swim in when we swim in the ocean embryonics. And then all of a sudden, Hanau Kala, the sun is born. But every time the sun rises, it is born. The sun rises, it stimulates the fish growth. And in the great ocean, Iloko Kamoana Uli, Ele stimulates fish growth from the epipelagic to the hydropelagic, to the very deepest part of the ocean. So Kane, heat from out in the atmosphere and heat from inside the earth to make things grow. So you have Kane Ika Pulehua, Kane Ika Pualena, Kane Ika Maile. It is that energy that allows things to grow. This is Kane Ka'onohi o Kala, the image of it. And the redness has to do with the Uahiapele. And so the sun is coming through despite of the Uahiapele. Okay, so you can see the Onohi o Kala, the eyeball of the sun. This is Kane Kumu Honua, Kane that's inside the earth. So if you look in there, you can see all of the heat and the awe of the earth and the energy that's coming out of the earth is all Kane, the making of new land. Okay, Kanaloa Nui Akea. Kanaloa occupy great spaces, basically the same as Lona Ika Owali, the same idea. Kanaloa Maave Ula Kala, Kanaloa of the red streak of the sunset. So Kanaloa sun is in the setting in the west, Kanaloa sun is in the south, and Kane sun is in the east and is in the north. Kanaloa o ka he'e hauna vela. Now I translated it as transpiration and evaporation. Now it might not just be transpiration and evaporation, because the hauna, he'e hauna vela is like a slimy thing, a slimy time. But the he'e hauna vela is, you know, when we go to compost things, and it smells really hauna. And then we cover it up with dirt and it gets really hot. And then when it's all pollen hot, we take it out and we use it, and it's fertilizer. And we can reuse the hauna again. Kanaloa okahe hauna vela. So kana, as I said earlier, kanaloa shares both the sun and the water with kane. In this particular chant, it comes from the Kumulipo in section 8. Just a few lines of it. Hana kane heakua, hana kanaloa kahe hauna vela iau. Hanao ka pahu o ka mō ana liha, ka wauma ukele, ko laua hopi mai. Okay, so created is God is kane, or appearing is kane. And appearing again is kanaloa in this transpiration evaporation cycle. And so what happens after that is it's ao. And ao is when clouds appear. Evaporation and evaporation is that which makes the clouds, right? Say yes, Mrs. Kanagali. Okay, is that which makes the clouds? So it's clouds that appear. And if clouds appear, then you have to have water basins and be ready for it. And so there's two water basins that are created. One is the Moana Liha. And the Moana Liha is the very deep ocean. It's the greater ocean, but it's a deep one. And Kanaloa is the akua of all water basins on the earth, whether it's fresh water or whether it's salt water. And then Kawauma Aukele is the very deep wet forest, but the under part of the wet forest where everything falls and then it rots. And then when it rains, it takes the rain when it's transpiring, going through transpiration rather, it takes with it the bacteria, the cells, the molecules that is forming in the rock. And it does the same thing with the ocean. And everything falls to the bottom of the ocean, it rots away, and eventually gets caught up in the water, comes up to the surface, and transpiration. And it goes up. That's Kanaloa. And so these four guys represent the Moana Liha, because they can go down to the Moana Liha and then come back up. And this is the Wauma Ukele. This is the wet forest. And this is the wet forest in late April and May when all the lehua is in bloom and you have allergies. But what's happening on the bottom of the wet forest is what counts, because what's happened on the bottom of the wet forest will eventually evaporate and then join the clouds, and it'll fix itself in the eve eve lani, and then it'll come back down and feed it. So there has to be a continuum. What goes up, gotta come down. What goes up, gotta come down. And it does it all the time. And energy is part of, energy is a whole bunch of nature to us, is nature. And we call them akua, but I don't think we put the word God to them initially. I think that was the idea of the missionaries or the other foreigners. They were always akua. And akua is like the backbone of things. And so if you're looking at the elements of nature, they are the backbone. Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you so much, Antipua. It's just intriguing how in Hawaiian culture, everything is inextricably linked. You know, everything is part of a greater process. And it's just so interesting to me, because I know in, you know, Western science, you know, to understand something, you have to do your best to remove the human element. I just love how in Hawaiian culture, there is no removing things. Everything is a part of this greater whole. And, you know, I don't know about anybody else listening in, but I wish we had more time, because I'm ready for the 100 plus, you know, next akua.
The human element can be there as well, because we have aumakuas, we have families that pass on, and we have families that have rain names, we have families that have wind names, we have families that have pele names, and those kinds of things. And so that's sort of what we hope that they're associating, and that's one of the reasons they're giving the names. And so they become aumakua.
That's awesome. And you know, and with that, you guys, I like transition a little bit. You know, I would have to say my time has shifted. my mind has shifted and my heart has too, a little bit, you know, and I'm kind of pumped up. I'm geeking out on this big time. You know, if I'm one of the, you know, the audience, you know, out there and I'm listening to this, I'm excited, but I'm asking, you know, how do we reclaim this relationship to our energy and our resources, you know, through these cultural understandings? What is the first step?
You know, one of the things that we did for the mountain, that was powerful. Because we're up there for 9 months, and all we did three times a day was chant about the mountain. And it wasn't only people that was on the mountain, but it was people throughout the island and people throughout the United States that were chanting along with us and doing the ceremony with us. It was powerful. So the idea of that, you know, I like ceremony because ceremony tells me that I can actually communicate. And I think that it's important that we know that we can communicate and that we continue because it's our right to communicate.
I like ceremony just to add to, you know, ceremonies shift our sort of mindset and our spirit to a different rhythm, right? Away from maybe just the rhythm of business as usual. Let's get this done so we can move on. But, you know, if you're going to harness certain energy and you're doing a ceremony to sort of pay respect and think that, I mean, that's a whole different kinds of shift that begins. And I agree at Mauna Kea that was happening. And I think more and more people are saying, hey, you know, if we're going to do this, we have to reconnect to some of these ceremonies. And, you know, ceremonies come with chants and other things that people need to learn and spend the time learning. I think that would be a place to start.
How about you, Yukaika? What's your mana'o? If I'm listening in and, you know, I'm starting to form new ideas about energy and my relationship with the resources around us, what is my kuleana there? And yeah. how do I engage with that kuleana?
I'd like to restate your question, Todd. And actually, I'm hoping that Dr. Kanaheli would be willing to answer this question, which is, you know, given the sanctity and of everything that you're describing, and also the power of ceremony and protocol, how then do we do the work of development? You know, I hate that word. You know, the quote unquote development and these kinds of projects, the energy or just really frankly, any human activity in a way that is pono.
Initially, we cannot think that it is ours. We cannot own it because we don't own it. And if we don't own it, then we have to be able, if we use it, we have to be able to give back. And so how do you give back? So that's one of the things, you know, that we have to start thinking about. How do we give back? Because one of the things I said about spaces and continuum, and there's a whole chant that talks about continuum. This comes down, this got to go back up. This comes down, got to go back up. You have to give back. That's what the idea of ha is. That's why we called haoles ha ole, because they didn't have ha. There was no giving back. And so we moved away from that. But I think even with the natural resources that we have and the natural energy that we have to find one way of giving back or other ways of giving back. And if we're just paying attention, and even if we just say one or two short chants to it, just to keep it alive in our minds, you know, that the lightning does live, and the lightning lives because it has this energy. And then the wind does blow, and we have winds from all its different akuas because it does have energy. And so if we keep that in mind and we become part of that cycle, and we learn what the chance is, and then we as humans can be more realistic about what the cycle is all about. Even if we take short portions of the chant and just do it, because you have to know what the energy is all about. And if you understand the energy, then you understand how to give back to it.
Yeah, and I want to just add to that, to Dr. Polani. You know, I talked about synchrony or synchronizing our activities with Mother Nature, with the Honua, so that we're not trying to force our human needs. There is a cycle we have to be aware of. And I think that will be another way to that will help us in thinking about shifting our paradigm about energy.
Conversation is just so amazing, you guys. And I just can't thank you guys enough for, you know, taking the time to be here with us, you know, to help us elevate this discussion, to really tie it to what we see and what there is around us in our environment, the elements that we interact with every day. I know here on Molokai, you know, I've had people say, "Oh, you're so lucky, Molokai never change," you know, and I always say, "Oh, luck has nothing to do with it. We got to work hard to keep this place like this," you know. It's kind of like as the world starts to get in trouble with the environment and whatnot, you know, it seems that places like Molokai, you know, ideologies and culture and values, you know, that we all share. It seems like those things are kind of becoming a little bit more relevant. I'm just proud that each of us has some kind of input into that.
You know, I read somewhere that Molokai Kalaupapa had the best sweet potato at one time. And they used to actually sell it straight to the mainland on the ships, on the old ships, because the sweet potato was so good. And so I think that if you can sell your product as being the best of the best and ship it straight out, because you have the history of being the best back in 1795, something like that. Because I think that the early explorers really liked the farming that they saw in Hawaii. So I think if you can stay on your history as being the best farmer for whatever you have, because you have a long history, and sell it straight to the mainland.
I know for us, we have a really long way to go. I can only speak to my own community, but part of the reason why we're having this overall discussion, right, this is about energy justice and energy sovereignty. And to me, if you're talking about justice, it's generally a reaction to oppression of some sort. I know for us, you know, our general relationship with energy here on Molokai is something that is out of our control, something that demands a huge portion of our income and our time. This new movement, having this discussion for you guys, opening this up to a statewide discussion, tying this to culture and making this dialogue ours, this is giving me a lot of hope. Yeah, I just wanted to mahalo you guys for bringing that energy, and I hope it's spreading. I hope you guys out there are picking up what's been put down over here. This is a pretty awesome download, you know?
You know, even all of the local i'as on Oahu and the local i'as on Molokai that you don't use anymore, that you can actually farm fish instead of going out into the ocean and repleting some of the ocean fish out there.
So we did have a question from, sorry if I'm interrupting, we did have a question from Facebook, and it says, if we approach the natural environment as an ancestor, as a god, whose help we need to meet the demands of modern life, then in what ways does our behavior change?
Try to interpret that question.
I guess they're asking, you know, if we're considering the environment and elements that we see, you know, as these deities or these greater presences that support us and keep us alive, how do we adjust our modern life to give respect?
The one thing is the idea of calling them gods was not our idea, but somebody else's idea. You're always a hua. And so they switched the word from a hua to god. So, and they're, you know, they recognize the whole natural phenomena of the elements, but they also recognize the natural phenomena of their own family and the natural phenomena of the generations that comes after the generations that came before. So, you know, I don't know about looking at, you know, if you've never looked at the elements as gods before or akulas before, then, you know, you don't have to start now. But what you can do is know that the nature is the one that gives us all of these things for free. And we have to be able to give it back, find a way to give it back.
I love that. What a great way to kind of put everything together, and we're just about running out of time, but I just going to ask you guys real quick, Ikaika and Tevita, if you guys get any like closing statements.
I just want to add to the question an answer. You know, part of what we have to do is maybe we need to scale down. Certain demands of modernity is taxing Mother Nature, and we have to find a way to live within those particular limits. Reciprocity is important, you know, returning and giving back is an important aspect of living within our akua.
Yeah, I just want to underscore, you know, several threads that I've heard both from Dr. Kanahele and Dr. Kaili, which is that it's not ours, and that it is important to add life to it. Those are really powerful ideas. The thing that I particularly love about it is that it goes right up against the ideas of possession and use and exploitation, you know. If we shift that core idea, then I think it opens up a whole new range of possibilities for how we can live and how we can move forward.
Perfect. How do we turn extraction into empowerment? That is tomorrow's discussion. So thank you very much for leading me into our introduction for tomorrow. Please join us again. We have a community-owned energy as a topic of conversation from our community out here on Molokai. A couple of my friends and neighbors who are volunteering to lead our efforts here to start a co-op that's not quite like other co-ops around Hawaii. We're really stoked to share our story with you guys. We also have Sunny Unga from Kahuku, who will be highlighting how critical it is for energy development to include community engagement. Super stoked. Our moderator will be Ali Andrews. She is a close partner of the Molokai community. She's from Shake Energy. Come join us again tomorrow and talk story some more, right? Thank you guys all for joining us tonight.
Aloha.